right?
It was really disappointing. It just became a real...
No sense of humor.
No sense of humor. No laughs, no chuckles. You know, I was actually very surprised at the age of the group as well. There were about 300 people, I guess. And I imagined the people to be quite a bit younger. I don't know what I mean by younger, but they're all very serious. They look like they were United Nations people. You know,
in the 40s, you mean?
Yeah.
Is that right? Well, they're CIA, DIA, NSC people.
Oh, so. We did a lot of American bashing, too. There were a lot of American family. They're just the most horrible people. They really were. There was a generalization. There's some very nice people from the States, but generally there was one woman who went down, and she admitted this on several occasions. She went down to find herself because she had just turned 40.
So she found her, tried to find herself in Managua? Jeez.
It was horrendous. And a lot of Americans doing a lot of apologizing, too. Ortega did come to speak at
one of that.
Yeah, and...
did you see that?
Yeah, it was pretty boring. One of the women, though, came up and, with tears swelling in her eyes, said, "I'm so ashamed to be an American." I should anecdote this story. This is one woman. We called her Bambi. She's from the States. And Bambi went up and she made this, you know, horrible, you know, she said how strong she was in solidarity with the people of Nicaragua in this struggle. And how sorry she was for her country and how disgusted she was. And apparently she was staying in the same house with a few people from CKLN, Dan and Josie.
Yeah.
And apparently that night she was storming around the house complaining about the lack of hot water and the lack of toilet paper, you know. So anyways, I don't want to go into any detail.
These are good. This is an inventory of the effects of electric overload on North Americans. They're trying to be tribal, trying to be identified with the third world identity. Because they've been made that way into electricity.
But they still have to control it.
Yeah, they still want to, use their content. They want to project their own cultural content and interpretation of how you'd be third world into it.
Mm-hmm.
But
so there's a front of pretending to identify and work closely with the third world, but they must have absolute control. And this is the case. And I mean, the point was made, and it's true, that a lot of the Latin American, Central American people, when it came time to voting, were strongly in support of both the American and the Canadian. So they had been lobbied very, very strongly. And it just, this may sound like a horrible comment, but it shows how willingly they're ready to accept domination.
By the first world.
By the first world, and how used to it they are. So and it just continues throughout this this conference.
Well, this is part of the paradox, is that the West is going east, or the North is going south, and the South wants to go north. They want to have what we have, so they actually think we're experts in how to be what they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the interval, you have this freezing point and cooperation, sort of subversive cooperation of the first world people supporting the third world to become like them.
Yeah.
So this is a big problem.
Yeah.
So obviously I'll have to send some Lynn LaRouche agents to infiltrate this international community radio
network.
There
was some there anyway, and I hit some of them at Miami Airport actually.
Oh, did you get some literature program?
Yeah. Well, no, they were in the the First Amendment areas.
Yeah.
They can't. It's so funny. I've never seen this before.
Yeah.
And you walk past an area, and someone's like, "Excuse me, sir. You over there with a knapsack," and I wonder like what they're doing there, I say no, and I keep walking, and usually they come after you. In this case, they can't. And on closer inspection, I saw they were, protected by an imaginary border of a First Amendment a protection area. But they couldn't go outside that area, so I sort of teased them, you know.
I spotted them from the other side of the border.
Take pictures of them.
Yeah. NSC, DIA photos, right?
But a couple of women who didn't look like, religious fanatics, and I thought, well, they must be LaRouche people.
Yeah, what do the posters say?
There are no posters.
Oh, okay.
It's just, literature, books, and so on.
Well, the LaRouche people are pretty good for documenting bureaucratic control by the intelligence Harvard-Yale people, and it sounds like some of them have come into this network, this community radio network. Hey, are you still there? Yeah, okay. I'll probably have some information to describe the background of these people who were oppressing you at this conference. In the next few months, I'll bring in some biographies of them.
The conference, I met some really good people. I met...
But that was among the groups, none of the bureaucrats.
Some people from Australia, some people from Africa who were there. And some good people from Canada and the States, but...
How about Panty Productions?
Well, that was the other thing. I mean, people went down more, again, in a political context. And people weren't really interested in music.
Or John Doe tapes.
Yeah, a few were. And so I made some contacts there and some exchanges of ideas. But so that's
okay, so that's what you did. So you went down there looking for the revolution, and you didn't know that it was going to happen back here last week. little coup at the station. It wasn't Bob Dobbs. Apparently a couple of guys came in and presented a synopsis of Bob Marshall's work in the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. And it was an audio dramatic presentation called Who's Forgotten Furry Lint?
Oh, really?
Which is the title
Yes, of course. Or
Bob Marshall would occasionally use over the last 4 years when he was working here. It's now subsumed into my work, which is Hand Signals for the Blind. But we presented about 3 hours, 45 minutes of material, beautifully synchronized by Dave Neufeld as engineer. You know, I never bothered to take the time to learn that kind of stuff, you know, since I'm a verbal person, right? So Dave was here. It was important to do the technical work, and he came up with some good segues. And I got home, and I found out that some people were reviewing the four-hour process and commenting on it while it was happening. So I have an actual several reviewers' comments on the show as it was happening. And so fortunately it was on tape, so I thought I'd present this to begin the celebration of what went on last week. And Kent was one of the people who witnessed it and taped the show and sells the tapes, apparently,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The documentation.
Yeah,
$35.
Yeah,
in a nice, nicely bound box.
Yeah.
Nice graphics.
Gold, totally flattering, all that.
And he has experience in graphics. He used to do it in a record company.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hear the reviews of Who's Forgotten Furry Lint.
Okay, let's go right to that.
Yep.
Hi, Bob. I got the show on. It's almost midnight, and I'm ready and waiting to hear it. I'll stay up and listen till I fall asleep and can't listen anymore. Anyway, look forward to it. Have fun. I will. Bye.
The future is the past. This is a production of Hand Signals for the Blind. Who's Forgotten Furry Lint?
Yeah!
I had such a message from Daryl about you. She said you cured and you threw a picture of her. She said she could play dragon. Well, they really, did you get wonderful vibes from the parents?
Yeah.
They're nice boys, aren't they?
Yeah.
They're really nice fellows, real nice.
I like Bob when Garrett was saying he was going to get the cake, and you go, relax. This is priceless. Oh, God, I wish everybody I knew was listening to this.
Hey.
Everybody gets their 15 minutes. Well, I got my 15 seconds. Lots of 11s in Sherman Skolnick's little bit. Notice that? Bob, this is great. This is truly wonderful. And I think it's about time. I can't imagine, I don't know. What I really want to say is I think it's great that you're doing it, and I can't imagine anyone else being able to pull it off. Where's Appa? That little excerpt about us glowing is really beautiful. Bob, you're fucking amazing. I swear to God, holy shit! And you're nice, too. May is so inspiring. Dweezil.
For what purpose, man? Give me the answer. What?
I don't have a reason.
Boring.
Planted a bomb.
Shut up already.
Someone would have to lock it.
Bring Garrett back on, or Bobby Phenomenon. Get these talking heads off. Hi, it's me again. I particularly like the way the lady's, you know, the lady from the calling out part, the way her confusion is so clearly evident next to your clarity. And you've got such an amazing voice. Oh, here comes Skolnick. Mick Jagger earns my respect tonight. Okay, first things first. It's got to be about 7 in the morning, and I'm just waking up after passing out at about 3 o'clock this morning. First of all, I'll never get sick of what's new in Baltimore. That was first things first. But Bob, the show was so amazing. It had all these little interesting, so many different textures and moods and things. I kept phoning up different people I knew up until 3 in the morning and saying, get your radio on. If you're my friend, get your radio on. And they're going, what, huh? But everybody did, and I've got all these weird messages on my machine now. It's really cute. Anyway, a job well done, and I did tape the show. I fell asleep. Just with the very last bit of music playing, so I don't know what your actual sign-off was. And I do want to hear the tape because somebody said to tape it, so that'll be really great to hear. Anyway, it was wonderful. I'm dead beat tired, but I guess I'll listen to what I taped today because I taped a lot of it. Yeah, it was fantastic, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye. Woo! Bob, it's me again. I always knew you were a genius, even if you can't kiss your elbow. Listen, you can have that singer on your album anytime.
Bob, I taped 4 sides of 90-minute tape, and I got as far as just a bit past the love letters in the sand, and the last thing on the tape was about the shape of our urban environment and condominiums and stuff like that, and then it cut off. So, we've got some of it on tape anyway. Bye-bye. It was a good show for what I didn't fall asleep through. Bye-bye.
Yeah, there's a pause here. We couldn't broadcast this message. This was top secret. This was a certain element's review of it, and it's not for public discourse.
I understand.
I think there's another one, and we're wrapping up pretty soon. Great review, say.
I'm pulling a Garrett. I love when he does that. Hi, Bob. I'm still flying high after last night's show. God, was that amazing. That was just too much. I just wanted everybody in the world to hear it. It was wonderful. Well, now that I'm famous, you're going to have such a hard time reaching me. I've got stars now mounted on my door, and I'm sure there's going to be lots of people trying to get a hold of me and interview me, so I can't stay on the phone too long. But I just wanted to tell you that thanks, I owe it all to you. And when people ask me how it is I got to be so famous, I'll say I owe it all to Bob. And, of course, I believed in myself. Thank you very much. I love you.
Bob, I've got another big news item on the news this morning. You're going to die when you hear it. You better call me. Urgent. This is real urgent. Call me, will you? I had to come down early this morning. I'm going to send a courier to get that tape. Call me back either at 363-4365 or 869-4012. If you get my tape at the former, call me at the latter.
What was that? 365-4132. 83251. Is that it?
Is this?
Yeah,
really?
This is, yeah. Turn it off. Turn it off. We don't want to hear this. Okay. Whoa, that was close. Geez, that last, what was that number? 513-6325. That was a private
scramble.
Oh, my God, my agents. Okay, Mike. Now, this may appear self-indulgent to, to play that, but there's a point. I mean, that person, that reviewer was assigned to cover this show, and the power of the revolution made them think the show was about them. And, there was a little 15-second slot about that person, but they felt so magnified and discarded under the effect of those 4 hours that essentially it was a drug effect. And I have to deal with this person now. They haven't come down. It's been a week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
I'm glad I just had that one reviewer, because that person is in big trouble now, and I have to be responsible for the effects of the show. But that is an example of many other intensities that I recorded from other people in person, not on tape. The intensities, you know, echoed back to me about the show. I mean, there were people who listened to the first hour and blissed out and didn't bother listen to the rest. It was enough for them, the first hour. So,
the job well done, Bob.
Let's show you the intensity. That's a good, that's a review. I mean, you know, that's someone who uses content thinking it was about themselves and feeling famous at the end.
Do you think I'm lacking somewhat in that sort of energy perhaps you had last week? Is it?
Oh, no. You offer a different drug. My drug is only available once every 4 years. At that intensity, I mean, it's been issued gently, you know, weekly over the last 4 years, but to make a summary of the last 4 years in a 4-hour segment was almost dangerous, and that woman who reviewed it expressed that very well. I hope she can get her job back.
So it's interesting to note that this year's CKLN logo is radio for the Global Village. Is it Global Village? Yeah,
that's what they have on the poster.
Yeah.
And they asked for recommendations to maybe redesign it, right, if it's not palatable. So my associate recommended that, obviously, to be more accurate, it should be Global Theater, Radio Global Theater, because part of being at CKLN is a phenomenon that interacts with other media, and there's always this PR battle to get exposure. So there's a theatrical battle within the very function of CKLN as a community station. We have to battle with other media, and that gets a kind of competitive, theatrical, dramatic aspect, which is what you use other media for. So it's not a village. It's a very violent, brutal, inflicting as much pleasure and pain on each other in a competitive manner. And so it's theatrical. It's theatrical because the real action is in the solar system, in the satellite environment. Therefore, we're left to fight it out on the old playhouse. The Phoenix Playhouse, you know, where endless rebirths, retrievals, and archetypal intensities, cliched archetype. So that's the meaning of the Global Village, where it's a theater of the absurd, where the unexpected is all that's expected. The unexpected, or the suspected. So you can anticipate that. And this is rather numbing for most people.
Mm-hmm.
They really take their roles rather seriously and believe that that diseases can be cured operating those roles. But those roles are the disease. The only homeopathic way of dealing with this global theater disease is a solar government perspective, which is what I offer. And again, we come around to me, Bob Dobbs. But I think I've hogged the mic long enough. Do you want to put a little stang on, and then we can talk to our guests? I
All right.
Time from the low.
Put a little dose on, okay. And we'll be right back. This is a short segment, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, very short. Minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, he's smiling. You never see Bob frown. You know that behind that amazing smile there lies a mind like a steel trap. Sure, he makes mistakes like what he did with those young women that time. But I think the newspapers exaggerated that. I know that Bob will do all of us fine in the long run. In fact, I think I know that we really need Bob in our lives. In our lives. In 1981 and in 1984, hi, little brother. And in 1991 and in 1995, when they bring the conspiracy to its heels. And in that wondrous year that we know is going to come all too soon upon us. And we'll leave our earthly things behind, and we'll go and join the Exodus from God only knows what strange planet they come from, if they really even come from a planet at all and not some energy star beaming away in the darkness, lighting our lives with the technology and the spirituality and the mentality of Planet X. Planet X coming down to take care of us, the geniuses, and see that there's a place for us in the world, and give us our rightful seat at the right hand of Bob or the left hand of Bob, depending on whether we're rewardians or mediocrities. But I don't want to get lost in the dogma. I want to tell you something that blesses my heart, and it's Bob. Bob? Yeah, I can hear him. I can hear him talking off there in the distance saying,
"This will all come to you if you send a dollar to the Church of the Subgenius, P.O. Box 140306, Dallas, Texas 75214. This will enable us to continue with the marvelous operations which we've known about and tried to spread throughout the Western Hemisphere and change this CFR trilateralist oriented goal reachers of the beyond noise getting here in this
Bob. Then you will get sex. This is a subliminal message brought to you in care of the Subliminal Message Corporation. Sex, money, Bob. These three concepts will always be linked in your mind. Sex, money, Bob. Sex, money, Bob. Sex, money, Bob.
Yes, this is a continuation of the flow spew that the doctors of Feel Good Ice Man got for us here.
You would have been told which Bob to choose in your area.
And this is not a bend out radio-oriented call, ladies and gentlemen. This is a spat spew and pumping of great images.
I think this is about the sickest thing I've ever heard on KFJZ and since I've been listening to it.
Doctor. This tape was produced by the Subgenius Foundation and affiliate. Final time control tape editing by Ivan Stang. Sequences performed and or edited by Reverend Ivan Stang, Dr. Philo Drummond, St. Paul Mavridis, St. Doug Wellman, Reverend Stevie Hambone, Reverend David Meyer, Reverend Jim Erickson, Reverend Huey, Pope Sterno Kekhaver, Pope Janer Hyperkleep.
Hello? Hello, I'd just like to comment on the show I heard last week, and I'd like to say that it was the best verbal epiphany I've heard on the whole station since I don't know when, and it ranks up with the non-verbal epiphany I heard of the last Labyrinth show about 2 years ago. Could I have a comment on that?
How about Kent? What do you think of that comment?
Well, I agree with him.
Move towards the mic.
Okay. Basically, I agree with him because, like I said, I was at home taping the show, and it was a complete verbal experience.
It was an epiphan, an epiphany. Bob hit the fan, right?
That's true.
Well, Bob hit the fan, and he flew off faster than my mind could hit. But what did hit my mind massaged it.
Basically, a paradigm shift for yourself.
Oh, definitely a paradigm shift.
Did it affect your personal karma?
It affected my personal karma in a very positive way.
Do you think that guy who did the show, you know, the Furry Lynch show, do you think that could be repeated?
I would hesitate to repeat it too soon.
Yeah.
Because based on the quality of what usually is on the station, that things could happen and society could collapse faster than is good for it.
That's right. Yeah, you have to give Pinks that support structure for a period of time.
That's true.
Right, and the reverberations of last week's show will be felt for many minutes.
Yes. Everyone should know that it happened, and everyone should hear it, but it shouldn't happen too often.
That's very wise. We did make tapes of it, and it's available to people for, you know, nominal bartered fee, you know.
I think it's also rather a synchronic event that I happened to open my copy of Les Chants de Maldoror.
When, now?
Yeah, just now,
while we're talking.
No, before, while the woman was talking.
Oh, yeah?
And I opened it up, and as I was scanning the pages, I just came to this sentence, and this is a genuine synchronicity.
All right.
And as I quote from Comte de Lautremont, whose book was published when he was at the age of 22, have you waited until now to hear the muttering and the conspiracies which rise up simultaneously from the surfaces of spheres, brush with furious wings against the palpalous borders of your fragile eardrum?
That's excellent, because as I stated many months ago, the sphere is the new symbol that takes over from the pyramid. Under Bob's reign, the Masonic symbol is a sphere, not a pyramid. So you have that in there, right?
Yes.
And, of course...
Of course, this book was published in 1868, but, Bob is not ahead of his time. Bob is with his time. It's the other of us who are behind the times.
Yeah, and 1868, that adds up to 23, which was the old number before I moved in and shifted to 22. You know, Burroughs and Robert Anton Wilson celebrate 23, which was a 19th century... pattern, mythic force, but it's 22 now. So that guy was in tune. He did it in the right year, 1868.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should acknowledge the engineer who worked there, Dave Neufeld. I thought he did excellent work.
Definitely. His engineering was right on the bang, and it was a good vessel for which the information was poured into and then disseminated through.
A knowledgeable vessel.
Oh, definitely.
And he co-created with it and added some particular inspired statements that were synchronistic in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned Salvatore as the last great nonverbal event.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Spain, and he'll probably be broadcasting this and recognize its force, right?
Yes, I think if we give this to him, he will somehow disseminate it through Spain, since he does have a radio show on Spanish National Radio.
Well,
and I think it's only a matter of time before Bob is on Canadian National Radio.
Yeah. Ralph Ben Murgi is going to have to look out, right?
I think we digress there.
All right, you're right. I'm sorry I brought up a pink. I mean, a name shouldn't be mentioned in this context like that. In this case, I'm complimenting him as a pink, right?
Mm-hmm.
About Salvatore, though, that show was legendary.
It was.
The sign-off show, and I think Furry Link can take it as a great compliment that he reached and matched the peaks established by Salvatore in
exactly,
the verbal
and
way.
I think Salvatore can take it as a great compliment that Furry Link show and his are mentioned in the same breath.
Well, that's what's that ticking sound?
It's the... It's the listener. The listener's ticking.
You're ticking. You're a time bomb of inspiration.
Oh, most definitely.
Well,
I am dancing as I speak, and fortunately the person who lives below who disrupted my sleep with the horrible bass playing last night is being disrupted. and the person next door who endlessly repeats Sweet Jane is being serenaded by my footsteps.
How'd I go?
But listener, now listener, you probably wouldn't have had this vengeance in you until last week, of course. You've now regained this confidence.
Well, no. I mean, the vengeance, I wouldn't even say vengeance. I would just say that, you know, the focus has been, we have needed a focus. We who used to call in and complain have needed a focus, and we always needed something to wave in the air so that they knew what we were talking about. And now we have it.
A standard.
A standard, yes.
Ah.
As the symbol of the Scottish people, the lion rampant.
So it's a standard of intensity and what real communication that's not impossible
exactly.
can happen.
No more, I mean, if I hear the song about the squirrel one more time on this station, I don't know what I'm going to do.
I'm not familiar with that song. Are you, Bob?
No.
Well, just listen in the afternoons, guys.
We like to avoid that, actually, listener, listening in the afternoon.
Understandable, but I work.
Yeah. I'm really enjoying this little beat, actually. It's a little metronome.
Yes. It's very clever. I think it's your discarnate now, so we're getting your central nervous system ticking away here. You know, the way John...
The very pulse of the listener is...
I cannot even feel my feet.
Yeah, remember John Cage talked about his experience in one of those soundless chambers, and you could hear your central. That's what we're feeling right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I thank you to be able to bring this intensity within the discarnate state and manifest your central nervous system, autonomic systems. They're just pulsing away. It's very tactile. I feel you're inside me, and I'm inside you, and the rest of us here.
Mm-hmm. It's the third mind.
No, Doug, it's the fourth.
Oh,
this ain't Doug St. Clair Smith. Is this Ivan Stang? Is this Ivan? No, this is not Doug. Never mind. Okay. Yeah, the fourth world is the electric world.
Yes.
The third is, space, time, and energy are the first three worlds. The fourth world is the electric world, which is a whole new zone which we can't even categorize. So I'd say it's your fourth mind. Okay, I'm talking dogma here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is
subject to change in 15 seconds?
Yes. Yes.
Just like discipline?
Yes.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, listener.
It's my pleasure.
Okay. You're
good
fired.
Night. In dreams.
Good night. You're fired.
Well, it's very interesting that this electric world... hello, I can't hear...
It's okay. Yeah, you're on. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we are. Okay, because I don't know this culture so well, I've never heard this term, the fourth world being the electric world. It's interesting because that corresponds to what the Tibetan, as channeled by Alice Bailey, speaks about when he talks about the fourth dimension. If, just to add another comment to what maybe that fourth world might be, it's... To some, it represents the astral plane or the plane of emotions, where you are beyond the time-space continuum.
Yeah.
But you are in. If the Earth were to be fourth dimensional, it would be. The Earth would physically still be there in three dimensions, but we would be fourth dimensional in ether, actually beyond ether, which ether is also material, but electricity. According to the 19th century, scientists believe that it is sort of concentrated ether, and the whole question is, what is this unifying element or fabric in the universe, if we're to believe such a thing? A recent interesting detail as a possibility or an idea of what an electron is we wonder why an electron has no mass, and the idea that an electron perhaps might be a hole in the ether into which... pores, spirals in ether, and passes through an arc in the fourth dimension or the fourth world, and then is deposited in the proton. And this is an interesting relationship that I've come across recently.
Yeah, that's, the characteristic of the fourth world is it can't be visualized.
Mm-hmm.
And so the 20th century scientists and their models always approach a flip point of absurdity because they're trying to visualize mathematically or verbally, visual concepts, what can't be visualized. And emotion, the interaction of emotion, can't be visualized. It's a dramatic interaction that's constant. And that's why we're moving from a society based on military bureaucracy to temple bureaucracy, because the world is run in the fourth dimension, the fourth world, by emotion. And that's why we have the rise of a religious aspect on all levels of society.
And also, again, what you're speaking of was commented on, again, in many theosophical writings and some that are sort of prophetic, saying that the incoming ray, for those who believe in the cosmic rays numbering seven, that we're passing from the sixth ray of idealism into the seventh ray of ceremonial order and magic, which also implies where religion and science must
it's into the dramatic. It goes into, all of art traditionally came out of the pagan rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And they retrace the emanation and return of the stages of being. And the artist, say what we call art, once the alphabet came in as a private produced product in Greece in 500 B.C., once the isolated activity of art and ideas came in, the rituals
they took the rituals, the pagan rituals, as an art form. And then this moved along as a basic for symbolism in all the arts up till the 20th century. Then what happened is that James Joyce realized that the rituals, the pagan rituals, replayed the stages of cognition, and that those were replayed by our collective environments. Our man-made communicating environments were on a macro level replaying the pagan rituals and replay of the stages of emanation and return. So, interject here.
Well, I could very easily agree to what you're saying, and I'm very inspired by what you, I mean, the idea.
So they,
it's never been put to me that way. But what I can say for one about, again, let's say something that is believed again on a theosophical level, that the Greek alphabet is symbolic of, if you were to understand the alphabet, then you could, the whole story of the destruction of Lemuria apparently is there in the letters. And what else do I know about? Something that you said makes me want to say this next idea, that in the Kali Yuga, or in the Indian calendar, this age of materialization is like adulthood in the human being, between childhood and death, is the symbolism is more relevant in the picture of involution into evolution.
Yeah.
That we are at a point of lowest involution into matter, and we're about to evolve out of matter, but with self-mastery instead of just astral vision.
Right.
So we came from the fourth world, but we didn't have self-mastery.
Now, let me just interrupt. Mike, don't you remember I used to talk about how the electric world, it goes around the old invisible nature, the old astral plane. That is church dogma. He's talking church dogma here, that there's a new dimension, that the old astral plane at best can be remined by the new militaristic bureaucracy of the solar government. That is the only way that the old astral plane can be implemented as a bureaucracy, but it will not be in the function of the new astral plane, which is this new electric world.
Mm-hmm.
And electricity is something, it's not just the electrons or electricity, whatever it is, it's the effect of electricity, which is an emotional drama.
For those who know math, they might find this next detail interesting in connection with what I said just earlier about the fact that the possibility that there might be, excuse me, an arc from the hole in the ether that is the electron, and then going through the fourth dimension into the proton, that this arc has a direct distance relationship, and it observes the inverse square law, which is also used to determine the intensity of radiation in terms of distance.
Right. Now, that arc is also...
The inverse square law states that from a point source of radiation, the radiation varies inversely
from the distance of emanation?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So that's the another metaphor for the emanation and return.
Fact. Yeah, this is an accepted fact. Now, I'll actually tell you the source of what I'm saying. There's a few books that were so-called channeled in 1975 by a man named Maurice B. Cook, and apparently his information comes from one of the masters known as Hilarion.
Oh, yeah.
Interestingly, he himself claims that he is, if we're to believe that it's Hilarion speaking through Maurice B. Cook, Hilarion is none other than St. John, as a disembodied source of information who wrote the Revelations and so on. And so it sort of, at this time, is trying to warn humanity of potential danger and so on. That could be, of course, that I don't know so much, I'm not so convinced about
that identity.
The whole book but some of the ideas presented in the so-called Hilarion books, as put forth by Marcus Books Publications, Maurice B. Cook's
Well, I think that whether it was St. John, the point is it's an archetype intensity reflecting St. John, and that's part of the second coming, is that these archetypes, these cliches will come back with archetypal intensity, but they will be new. It'll be a new situation for them, and they will participate in the emotional drama, not as what they were, but what they want to be. And I think the arc represents the rainbow. You know, that endless rainbow. I think that we'll find the arc as a symbol of the rainbow in matter. And the rainbow is a portal that never is open completely and never arrived at and never closed. So I think immortality is for all subgenii. And a few pinks, even Ralph Ben-Murgy, if he listens close enough, he could have immortality with Bob. So did you want to be identified?
Oh, it's I want to say hello to Doug, who phoned in. I'm Perry, and Mike, I'm sorry I missed your rap about Nicaragua. And
well, we can talk after.
Okay, certainly.
And also, I'd like to say one of the people who called was Al Differ.
Oh yeah,
who
Al.
Sends greetings to all of us.
Thank you. Did he hear the show last week? Did he?
No, he didn't. Okay. But he listened this week and hasn't heard for a while. And is enjoying it. So.
Well, we did address Al last week at the end of the show. Dave came on and did a little rant. He tried to be a Bob, you know, and he did a rant, and he addressed it to the taxi drivers, and I couldn't help think of Al. And I was thinking, I wonder if Al's hearing this, because it was that time of the night when usually taxi drivers are listening to CKLN. So I don't know if Al is a taxi driver, but...
Not for the next year or so, actually. Yeah.
I see. Psychically, I pick up that he has some contact in that trade. Maybe it's through a relative.
Okay. Are you going to be back in 2 weeks?
I'll be back in 10 minutes, Mike.
Well, let's say 2 weeks for now.
Okay.
I want to thank you, Bob, Perry, Kent, and Doug, and everyone for calling in.
Thanks for
back. Sorry I missed last week. I don't know if I should have come back. Perhaps you seem to have things under control in a big, big way.
Well, Doug verifies you to be back because he says it shouldn't be repeated. So we'll have to wait a few more years or something for it to happen again.
Will you sell me a copy of the tapes before we go today?
Certainly will.
Okay. Thanks.
Is that it?
I just want to make it very clear that Mike Dyer has one of the most... interesting verbal and nonverbal jaunts into beyond the midnight hour on CKLN and beyond.
Thanks. I'll pay you later, Perry. Thanks. Good night, all.
Vous écoutez CKLN FM 88.1 Toronto.
That keeps you from just submitting and eliminating yourself right now. Black people have a state of mind where they're eliminating themselves like crazy. So they don't know who they are.
If the state won't kill us, then we'll have to kill ourselves. It's no longer good etiquette to headhunt savages, so we'll just have to do it ourselves. It's not polite to violate laws, so we'll just have to find an Indian to oblige us. It's poor form to let an Indian starve. We'll have to deprive our young selves. Blinded by nicety and polite liberality, we can't see our enemy, so we'll just have to kill each other. In this field of dying leaves, dead grass, and rusting wind, blooms the blue, pink rose. Death. Death hangs over us like a black widow maker on a treeless mountainside. A beleaguered army caught in a valley we thought green, lush, and teeming with light. suddenly become a swamp full of alligators, leeches, filth, and disease. Disease and death. Dis-ease. Caused more by the shame of being fooled one more time. In the darkness of our own confusion, we have forgotten our reason for being.
Right now, you have American Indian people, at least they still have a cultural alliance to their past, and they have known exactly how they've been fucked around. Black people at this point don't know. And they don't know. If you ask black people about the American Indian, I think the consensus would be like, I ain't giving a fuck. You know, but they don't know. But you talk about brainwashed, lost people. They ain't giving a fuck about anybody else. They ain't giving a fuck about them. If you don't give a fuck about yourself, you ain't giving a fuck about anybody else. So, you know, those alliances are not there only because that black people are here, like I told you. Because we don't even know where we are, or who we are, or what we are. You know what I'm saying? At least American Indian, it's just blatant, you know. And they have, but they do have their cultural ties, and they do know what's happening to them. And they at least try to attack it. Like Bobby Seale bugging out, you know? The whole thing is that you don't get entwined into doing it the system's way, and you don't, I mean, you can live, breathe it a certain way, and also at the same time, you got to not give a fuck, you know? Not give a fuck.